Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. We have an exciting program today. We're going to be talking about some of the more important aspects of Bible prophecy. What is Mystery Babylon? Now, I'm sure all of your life you've heard that term, Mystery Babylon the Great. What does it mean? Is there any connection between the Tower of Babel, Nimrod, and all of those ancient religious practices and beliefs, and today? Is Babylon being restored? And as a matter of fact, could it possibly be that the very city itself is being rebuilt and will play a prominent role in these last days? Well, I have a wonderful friend who's going to be explaining the concept of Mystery Babylon to you. In fact, this friend, he is a dear friend, a dear Christian brother. We've had many, many discussions along these lines. He is a noted author. He has a very prominent ministry in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I'd like to welcome to Southwest Radio Church my brother, Joseph Chambers.
Tex, it's a delight to be on Southwest Radio Church with you. This radio ministry has been significant ministry for many years. I have a lot of friends who love and listen to Southwest Radio Church regularly. I've heard it myself, and I just have a lot of respect for Southwest Radio Church. And Tex, to be on Southwest Radio Church with you is a joy out of my heart.
You know, Pastor Chambers, we were together not too long ago there in Charlotte, and I had the pleasure of speaking at your church at a prophecy conference. And I was so fascinated, Brother Chambers, because you made a presentation there. You had slides, you had actual photographs where you had gone to Babylon itself, ancient Babylon, and you've done probably more research, and you've certainly had more prayerful consideration on this topic than anyone I know in the world today, possibly. And that's why I wanted you to come and relate, and we're going to be talking today, and you've been so kind to agree to be on with me several days. First of all, I'd like to just ask you, this trip to Babylon, when did you go? How did you get there? Describe it. Just tell us everything that you'd like the audience to know about this recent trip to Babylon.
Tex, let me kind of go back and start. About 22 years ago, as I was studying the book of Revelation in connection with Daniel and other books of the Bible, I became convinced that Babylon, literal Babylon, would be rebuilt. Revelation 18, I felt, was a picture of a literal city in the literal location of Babylon, and that here where the origin of paganism and the origin of human government as a domination over man, here where it really began, God was going to judge it. And I preached that starting better than 20 years ago. Most people looked at me kind of a slant when I would preach this and said, what's wrong with this guy? You know, he's going crazy. And I found nobody, I mean nobody, who ever agreed with me that Babylon was going to be rebuilt. They always said, well, Babylon was destroyed according to the Old Testament at certain place and certain scripture, and Babylon will never be inhabited again. Well, I would say, no, that's a future destruction that God has pronounced and prophetic voice has declared about Babylon. It's going to be rebuilt. And I'll never forget, about 9 years ago, I picked up the Charlotte Observer here in the city of Charlotte, and I looked, and here was an article, Babylon is being rebuilt by the Iraqi government.
Hmm.
They were going to spend $100 million, this article said, to rebuild the old city, and I just almost went up through the roof. I mean, here I've been preaching something for better than 10 years at that point, maybe a dozen years, and I had nothing to back it up except the Bible. Of course, you don't need anything besides the Bible.
That's right, but you know, isn't it wonderful when you see these things being fulfilled, and it confirms the Bible?
Well, that it's happening all the time. And I mean, I could sit here and name so many that I have learned about in the last 12 months where prophetic truths, prophecies given by great prophets of God have been declared authentic, have been given credibility because of a new archaeological study, a new archaeological dig, a new find in a tale somewhere, a tale being, of course, a mound where the city is buried. And it always amazes me. And so when I read this article, I was just absolutely exhilarated. I took it out and took it to the pulpit, and I told my people, here, I've been telling you this ever since I've been your pastor. I'd been here at better than 10 years at that time. And I said, I mean, here it is. I mean, it's happening. And I was just absolutely overwhelmed. What happened then, of course, 2 years ago in December, is the Holy Spirit spoke to my heart that I should go to Babylon, that I should myself make a trip all alone to the country of Iraq and just see what was happening. So I said, how do I do this? And I was just totally unaware where to start. I called Washington, and I got a hold of the embassy in Washington, and I talked to two or three different people who couldn't understand what I was saying. I couldn't understand what they were saying. And I finally got a Yonah Mahassin on the phone.
This is at the Iraqi embassy in Washington, D.C. Okay.
I mean, I just called cold turkey. I know they thought I was crazy. And I told them my interest, and I said, I want to go to Iraq. And they said, well, the first thing you need to do is we need some documentation about you. So have your senator or your representatives or somebody to write us. So I called Senator Helms and Congressman Alex McMillan, who is my senator and my congressman. And, you know, knowing them personally, I said, will you write a letter for me to the Iraqi government and tell them I want to come and that I'm okay, that I'm not a bad guy? So they did, and just a few weeks I got this call from Yonah Mahassin in the Iraqi embassy, and she said, Reverend Chambers, we have approved your visa. You can go to Iraq. Now, tell me when you want to go. And I said, Yonah, I don't know when I want to go. I said, tell me something about it. She said, well, we would like to invite you to come as our guest if you would attend on a specific occasion.
Hmm.
I said, well, Yonah, what is that occasion? She said, that's the second annual International Babylon Festival that is being conducted in the old restored city, or where we're restoring the city of old Babylon. I said, Yonah, that's exactly when I want to go. And so the Iraqi government sent me my airplane ticket and paid my way and furnished me a guide in a hotel and paid all my food. And the whole trip was on the Iraqi government. The way the Lord worked this out, of course, is how God has always worked through men and women who are willing to be obedient and submissive to Him. Of course, I began to make my preparation. I was amazed at people saying to me, Reverend Chambers, you're going to Iraq? See, all they had been reading is all the news about Iraq and Iran and the war and the devastation and the viciousness. And I said, yes, I'm going because the Lord told me to go, and I have absolutely no fear. I mean, I could not have been more at peace.
Mm.
I could not have known that the angels of God were more totally in charge of what I was doing than I knew that. In fact, I went all over Iraq. I walked up and down the streets. I went anywhere I wanted to go, alone if necessary, and never gave it any thought because I was totally under the supervision of God's divine spirit. And
Amen.
I knew that. And that's how we really ought to live our lives, to be honest with you. And it was an unusual experience, but it was a breathtaking time. And there's so much I saw in Babylon and in Iraq besides just Babylon, until to talk about the whole trip is one of the most exciting things I ever do, is tell people about Nineveh and Nimrud and Uruk and Ur being Ur, as we would call it here in America, but they call it Ur over there. I kept asking, I want to go to Ur, and they said, what are you talking about, Ur? And nobody could understand it. And finally, somebody knew what I was saying, and they said, oh, you're talking about Ur of the Sumerians. See, we call it Ur of the Chaldeans, but it's actually Ur in their language of the Sumerians, because it was the land of Suma, or the land of, we call it Shinar in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
The word Shinar in our Bible, Shinar, is actually the equivalent of the word Suma in the old Sumerian, or the Iraqi language.
Okay.
So Suma and Shinar are the same, and it was called Ur of the Chaldees because at the time the writer, the prophet, wrote, Ur was under the domination of the Chaldeans, but that's not its original history.
Hmm. You know,
am I making sense?
You absolutely are, Pastor. And I remember reading a book not too long ago. This was maybe a decade ago. And it had a picture of the ruins of Babylon. And it said, here is this city. There's nothing there today. Absolutely nothing. All there is to denote that it was the ancient city, the capital of Babylon, is a small little sign.
Well, you see, what those Iraqis have done, they for years have been going to Babylon. There's a city right close by called Hillard. And they've been going to Babylon and taking the bricks from that massive place with 20-some miles of walls around it. The walls were 78 feet wide or thick. They actually would race chariots on top of the massive wall that went around the old city of Babylon.
Hmm.
They've been carrying those brick away, and they've built the whole city of Hillar of thousands and thousands of people. And they've built the city out of the brick from the old ruins of Babylon.
Hmm.
So that they've carried those bricks, not just the Hilla, of course, but they've hauled those bricks different places over the country of Iraq and built massive structures. And so you can go in these places and find brick with Nebuchadnezzar's name on them in a modern-day city that has been built with a brick from Nebuchadnezzar's city of Babylon.
That's really fascinating.
Oh, there's so much fascinating about it until it's almost impossible to quit reading. I get so excited when I get to digging and learning a little more that I can't stop. I can't even go to bed at night.
Well, when you were there, what are they doing? I mean, have they actually built the, you know, you read in the Bible where the judgment of God came, Daniel, and the finger on the wall, those halls and all those kinds of things. Have they built any of the structures back yet?
Well, they have built many, many of the structures. They've rebuilt the gate of Ishtar. Ishtar, of course, was the goddess, the consort of their main god, mm-hmm. Marduk. And so Ishtar and Marduk were the main god and goddess, and they rebuilt the beautiful gate of Ishtar. It is not as big as it originally was in Nebuchadnezzar's day, but it's a gorgeous gate of blue baked enamel brick with these mythological creatures, you know, at different levels all around and all over that beautiful gate. It is a marvelous place. They've rebuilt the processional walls. They've rebuilt the walls around. I just read of the day that they almost finished with Nebuchadnezzar's palace. There's just some breathtaking things that they have already accomplished. But they are going at such a rate now. They are building at such a rate until it is really overwhelming, and some breathtaking things are happening there. I wrote a brief statement about how the Babylonian festival began. The theme of the Babylonian festival was something that just really took my breath away. Here was the theme now that the Iraqis themselves had prepared. It says, from Nebuchadnezzar to Saddam Hussein, that's the president now, from Nebuchadnezzar to Saddam Hussein, Babylon rises again. Now, here's the brief statement. After a brief statement in Arabic, this is, quote, the mystic sounding event began. Background music with a mythological ring hurled the drama of a returning monarch. King Nebuchadnezzar enters with great fanfare. Paganistic incense fills the air as the worshippers of this godlike king march to his tomb. The ceremonial dress is the ancient Babylonian attire. Other than the amplification, strobe lights, and fireworks, it is very authentic. The air is pregnant with excitement or evil, depending on your perspective. Clearly, King Saddam Hussein is believed by the Iraqis to be the new Arabic Messiah, ready to lead the Arab people to unparalleled greatness. The riches of this nation, with the world's second largest production of oil, has the wealth and the means to affect the entire world economy. Will this be part of the Antichrist world government and help produce unparalleled prosperity for a short period? I personally have no doubt that it will. Now, that's end of quote from the actual article. But what continued to unfold in front of me was the burning of incense. The air was filled with incense. The music was so mythological until you could feel a pregnancy of evil in the air, that if I had not been a spirit-filled Christian, I think I would have been concerned about my spiritual and mental safety. Mm. I mean, I heard them say that Ishtar is returned again, and they used the term Baghdad at that point. At some point, they'll probably say Babylon. But Ishtar, that's the old goddess again, is returned to Baghdad. And they actually had her in their ceremony as they worshipped. And the whole thing was worship. It was New Age to the core. It was occultic. And yet it was a ceremony, of course. And, of course, it was all in Babylonian pagantry and attire. And it was breathtaking, beautiful in a way. But also, it was a signal of something happening that is contrary to what you and I believe in the great Christian faith. Before I forget something, let me remind you that while I was in Iraq, I was there 2 weeks, of course, alone. Well, 2 weeks counting travel time. 2 weeks alone. I never heard the name Jesus from anyone's lips while I was there.
Mm.
And of course, you know, you just were submerged into their culture and their thinking. But I sensed that there was a revival of Ishtar and the revival of this old pagan religion that was much greater than I could ever learn because, of course, you know, and I knew very few people who could even speak my language, and I certainly couldn't speak the Iraqi language. But one day we was going down the road in a rented car, and the guide was sitting in the front with my driver, and the radio was on, and this mythological music was on. just like we had heard at Babylon. And so I got up on the edge of the seat, and I said to my driver, I said, tell me, what is that radio program? That sounds so familiar to what happened at Babylon. And he reached and turned the radio off, and he refused to even tell me. He wouldn't even talk about what was on the radio. I'll never forget that, because I felt that same spirit. Everywhere you'd go, you saw something dedicated to Ishtar. It was like that Ishtar was becoming the center of their attention. Well, that's Mystery Babylon, see. That's what's happening all over America, all over the world.
Mm.
Let me go back a little bit. We went to Uruk. Uruk is a town that is actually older than Ur, older than Ur. I keep using these two words interchangeably because I'm used to saying Ur now, but I want to say it where people understand what I'm saying also. But we went to Uruk, and this town, Uruk, was built about 3,000 plus years before Jesus Christ, actually older than Ur itself. And in this town, there was the ziggurat in the middle of it to Inanna. I-N-A-N-N-A, Inanna.
Okay, Pastor, this is such an exciting thing, this ziggurat, this temple like the Tower of Babel built to Inanna, the goddess.
Well, see, she is the background of Ishtar. So that Inanna, and then it moves from Inanna, which is Sumerian, to Ishtar, which is Babylonian, to Isis, which is Egyptian, to Ashtart, and Ashtoreth, which is the same, and it moved, and so every goddess of fertility known among paganism has its roots in Inanna and Ishtar. They are the background goddess for all the fertility goddesses by different names in different cultures.
Now, there was recently an article on the religion page of the Houston Chronicle, and let me just give you the headline. It says, "Feminist Revive Ancient Goddess Worship." Now, what does that have to do with your visiting there and seeing the signs of the worship of the goddess Inanna and Ishtar and such?
Well, I believe that the whole spirit of Babylon, you see, the city of Babylon and King Nebuchadnezzar, they made paganism popular.
Hmm.
They made paganism fashionable. There's some things that the Lord gave me out of Revelation chapter 18 that I want to share that I think is the most breathtaking prophecy that God ever poured into my heart about why Babylon has to be rebuilt and has to be destroyed and judged to fulfill God's judicial excellence. See, God is a God of judicial excellence. He does everything to the nuance. I mean, every I is dotted and every T is crossed. And God is going to judge the very place in the world where paganism had its official inauguration and where it was launched into a worldwide movement.
Yeah.
See, out of Babylon, out of Sumer, which Babylon is in Sumer, but out of Babylon came paganism in a fashionable attire so that it became a sellable item. Nebuchadnezzar made it sellable to the world. He made it fashionable to the world so that God now has got to raise up what was condemned 2,500 to 3,000 years ago, and God's got to raise it up, put it back in its form, allowing Satan, of course, to be the instrument of all that activity, and God's got to judge it, because God's got to finalize the judicial excellence of His holiness and of His judgment, and God's going to do that in the book of Revelation, chapter 17 and chapter 18, and God's going to judge what inaugurated paganism on a worldwide scale, and that's why there's got to be a revival of it.
You know,
I've got a book that I want to tell you about that just came from the Iraqi government.
Okay.
And the book is by the title, about the theme that I gave you of the Babylonian Festival of 88, from Nebuchadnezzar to Saddam Hussein, Babylon Rises Again. But this is a book now that was just printed by the Iraqi government, and they sent me a copy. And I want to read you the opening statement of that book so that if anybody doubts what we're saying, this ought to be plenty of documentation for that. But let me read from this book. Babylon Rises Again. Glorious in a glorious time. She is the lady of reviving centuries, rising dignified and holy, showing the great history of Iraq, adding to its magnificence and emphasizing its originality. The phoenix of the new time, rising alive from the ashes of the past to face the bright present that places it on a golden throne and bringing back to it its charm, its charming youth, and unique glory. Babylon was not a city made of rocks and bricks and full of events. It was not a forgotten place of the ancient past. In fact, Babylon is something else. Since its birth, Babylon has stretched its arm to the future to be the place of wisdom and to represent the first civilization and to remain as a glittering lighthouse in the dark night of history. Here is Babylon. Babylon is in the Akkadian language, spelled B-A-B-I-L-U. Then he goes on to say that he, Saddad Hussein, emerges from Mesopotamia, as did Hammurabi and as did Nebuchadnezzar. He's emerged at a time to shake the centuries old dust off its face.
That is amazing.
That's their book.
Oh, Pastor, I tell you, those are smooth and charming words straight from the pit of hell.
Well, it's very clear that they are planning Babylon to be the center of a world civilization.
Friends, please be with us again tomorrow as we talk with Pastor Joe Chambers. Until then, this is Tex Mars reminding you, Jesus said, when you see these signs, look up, for your redemption draweth nigh. Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Mystery Babylon, mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. The mother goddess, is she back? Well, I have my good friend, Pastor Joe Chambers, with me again to talk about this very subject. Pastor Chambers, welcome again.
Delightful, Tex. I really am having a great time. I love talking about this subject.
Well, you know, it's the very heart of Bible prophecy. Because the Bible says in Revelation 17 there will be this incredible worldwide religious system called Mystery Babylon in the last days. And I simply call it exactly what it is, Pastor Chambers, the worldwide church of Satan. And you talked about the headquarters of that, the emanation where everything proceeds from. We might call it the fountain of evil, is that ancient city of Babylon. And what you've been telling us is it's being restored today. You've just got so much documentation. Is there something recently that really emphasizes or reinforces all of your research?
This book that I read from at the close of yesterday's program, From Nebuchadnezzar to Saddam Hussein, Babylon Rises Again, that book just goes on and documents all the things that are happening in the restoring of the city of Babylon. And it's a booklet now, and on the front says Minister of Information and Culture, Department of Information, and that's printed by Iraq and by their government and distributed by their government.
Do you think we're going to start seeing in Newsweek and Time and other major publications more and more news about Babylon?
Yes, sir. It's fixing to happen. Now, I have in my hand an article from the World Press Review, February 1990.
Okay.
World Press Review. And a whole page was devoted to the rebuilding of Babylon.
Hmm.
They start off talking about the famous Hanging Gardens. They talk about this great city that had 28 miles of walls that were 27 yards wide, that's 78 feet wide. It talks about the beauty of that old palace. Now, here's what they say. Today, thousands of workers are reconstructing the ancient city of Babylon in the middle of the Iraqi desert. More than that of Marduk or even of Nebuchadnezzar, the new Babylon, expected to be finished, now listen to this, in 1994, will be the city of Iraq's president, Saddam Hussein.
He is moving his administration, the president of Iraq.
I mean, that's what it sounds like.
The dictator of Iraq.
I never heard that before, see. Expecting to be finished in 1994 will be the city of Iraq's president, Saddam Hussein. Now, that's a quote. Now, continue to read. Though he has not had the marital successes of his distant predecessors, he is having his name stamped into the bricks with which the city is being restored. That's exactly like Nebuchadnezzar did. Every 6 feet along the new walls, there is a brick with an inscription in Arabic provided by the Iraqi president. And here's the inscription. The Babylon of Nebuchadnezzar was reconstructed in the era of Saddam Hussein. End of quote. 60 million brick have been laid so far. Now, listen to the argument that's going on. Hussein, an Iraqi archaeologist who is in charge of the restoration, are enthusiastic about the project. But the international archaeological community is less delighted. Many archaeologists think that the restoration is unjustifiable from any point of view, a kind of megalomaniacal Disneyland without any historical or scientific merit. but the Iraqi ruler is resolved to finish his project. Besides the palace of Nebuchadnezzar, which is almost complete, he plans to rebuild the summer palace, the temple of Hammurabi, the Greek theater, the processional way, and even the controversial hanging gardens, which many historians believe never existed. Three artificial hills, each almost 100 feet high, are being built on the plain. They will be planted with palm trees and vines. At the foot of the hills will be restaurants and perhaps a casino.
Hmm.
Now listen.
Why not?
Straight out of the World Press Review, February 1990.
Yeah, I tell you, we're really seeing amazing Bible prophecies being fulfilled. We're seeing incredible events occur. Who would have ever thought this?
The archaeologists say it's crazy.
Mm.
But if God's ready for something, it doesn't matter what anybody says.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, how does this fit in with Bible prophecy? In other words, do you see many people flowing back into Babylon? Is this going to be an inspiration to the New Agers of the world, to the Hindus and the other Eastern religionists?
Well, I don't think there's any question that this is going to become a New Age center. There was, in 88, at the International Festival there in Babylon, there was about 40 different countries that were represented. There was all kinds of groups from different parts of the world who were there. That was just the second annual Babylon Festival. This year will be the fourth annual. And the book that I was just reading from on the end of yesterday's program has the picture of what looks like a brand new Colosseum, huge building that I did not see when I was there before. Has a picture of the hanging gardens that are now planted with palm trees and being irrigated. This Colosseum looks like it would probably seat 10, 12, 15,000 people, beautifully situated, very, very beautifully presented in this booklet, so that much has happened since I was there in 88. How much, you know, I just don't know. The news coming out of Iraq is still very slim and very much a closed society. But that it's getting ready to be the New Age Center is no question. I mean, no question. The music and the drama that was there was New Age. It was, I mean, there was nothing about it that had any relevance to what you and I know of as Western thought, especially any religious thought.
The Bible talks about something very dramatic that's going to happen. Evidently, there in Babylon, it talks about the dark angels that are now bound up in the river Euphrates being released in the last days.
Demon spirit.
Tell us a little bit about that. Is that at Babylon? Were they bound up before when Babylon was first destroyed? Will they be released again and bring havoc on the earth?
Apparently, these represent spirits, demon spirits, that were involved in all the proliferation of wickedness and filth and evil out of Babylon. You've got to understand that their worship is a kind of orgastic worship. It is flesh, it is sex-oriented, all kinds of sexual orgies, homosexuality, lesbianism. You know, the old idea of the worship of a god or a goddess in the world of paganism or polytheism is that a man goes to worship a female god dressed like a woman. A woman goes to worship a male god dressed like a man. So that the confusion of sexes that has become so dominant in America, that in itself is absolutely Babylonian. It is paganistic. That's why God said to the children of Israel in the Old Testament that a woman was not to wear that which pertaineth unto a man. But see, all of this is Babylonian in style. I took pictures of jewelry all the way back from Uruk and Ur, and of course from Nineveh and the Assyrian kingdom, from Babylon. And the picture of this jewelry that is on display in the museum is precisely, I watch people come in, or I see people where I go, and I see big earrings in their ears that hang down to the shoulder with all kinds of string, all kinds of decoration. And it is exactly, I'm telling you, it is exactly like the jewelry I have pictures of that came from Uruk, that came from Ur, that came from Babylon, that came from Assyria, kingdoms of Nineveh and Nimrod. It's no different, because it is going back to Babylon.
So the women today in America, in Europe and elsewhere, are beginning to wear even the clothing and the apparel. In the USA Today, about a month ago, they showed a sort of a faddish thing that has begun among the jet setters. And what they're doing is drilling a little hole in their nose, and they're attaching some kind of a crystal necklace that goes through this ring in the nose up to the ear.
You got to be kidding.
And was that prevalent back then in Babylon?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They wore it in their nose. See, these were talismans. They were charms.
Hmm.
You see, the people under those paganistic lifestyles lived in fear of the gods, because the gods was raging entities, and some of them were called good, and some of them were called bad. That's where we get white and black magic from. All of them were bad. They just happened to be that, you know, some were called good because they were supposed to do good things, but they were evil, and their ultimate design was evil. These people lived in fear of this. The people in Babylon and Sumer and Assyria and all these pagan cultures, they had two goals in mind, especially the women. They either wanted to be a goddess and become a goddess, so they would try to take on the attire of a goddess, or else they were trying to ward off the spirits, the evil spirits, and so these jewelries and things that they wore had either one of those designs, either to become like a goddess or to ward off the evil spirits that were the result of some angry god or some activity of an angry god.
Mm.
And all of this roots right into paganism. It is paganism at its core.
Where in the world did the Babylonian religion that's being revived today spread to back in those days?
Well, see, from Uruk and Ur, Inanna, the old goddess Inanna, which was the original form, out of her came every goddess that is known to man, and from Marduk, and from the other different gods, and there was a pantheon of gods. See, everything in nature was represented in some form as a god. I've been reading some of the books about the ancient god and how the whole terms developed. It started off as an idea. The river is a god, so we prayed to the god of the river. And as they prayed to the god of the river not to flood them in the spring and to give them ample water and you know, not to overflow its banks at the wrong occasion, and, you know, as they would pray to the god in the river, through a period of several hundred years, they assigned an image to that god.
Mm.
To begin with, the god didn't have an image, but they assigned an image to that god. And so the pantheon of pagan gods all arose out of being assigned an image to some force of nature that had already been labeled a god, and they assigned an image so that finally we get a god representing this force of nature, like the goddess represents fertility, the ability to bear children, the ability to be fertile, see. So it originally was just an idea, and you prayed to this god who made you fertile, but then they gave an image to that god, which started as Inanna and became Ishtar and Isis, etc., etc.
You know, this is an important thing you're saying, Pastor Chambers, because the Bible talks about in the Old Testament where the king of Babylon consulted with images. So these could have been demon spirits.
Right. No question. See, the Bible makes it plain, not Jesus, but the Old Testament makes it plain that these gods, these false pagan gods, are demons.
Mm-hmm.
That every one of them is inhabited by demon powers and demon spirits. And there's so much, my mind starts going like a whirlwind. We went to one of the big pagan temples up in Assyria, and also went to pagan temples down in Uruk. The pagan temples always had three altars and three holy places, because the Old Testament, the pagan gods were always presented as a trinity. There was a god and a goddess, which was the consort, and then usually a sun goddess or a third god who fit into the pantheon of this trinity.
The unholy trinity. So there's a counterfeit there.
Always a counterfeit.
Mm-hmm.
Always a counterfeit. Everything. When I went to the temple, the ruins of the temple up behind the palace at Nimrud, which is up about 40 kilometers from Nineveh, it was the palace of some of the great Assyrian kings. They took me back to the temple, and when I walked in, there was a holy place. And then there was an entranceway with a place to bathe your feet, to ceremonially clean your feet. And then there was, well, that first was an outer court, I'm sorry. Then there was a holy place with a place to wash your feet. Then there was an altar to slay the sacrifice. Then there was a hand laver to wash your hands. And then there was the holies of holies. So you had the outer court, you had the inner court of the holy place, and then you had the holies of holies, except you always had three holies of holies for the trinity of the pagan god.
Mm.
So that was always true in all the temples. I just come from Egypt. The same was true in the Karnak temple at Luxor. There were three gods, the triad or the trinity gods, who had their holies of holies right inside on the left as you entered the main temple of the Karnak temple, which was built 4,000 years ago in Luxor, Egypt. always you find this trinity, so that everything the devil does is always an effort to duplicate God. He's the master duplicator. He doesn't do anything original except rebel. Everything else he duplicates like the great God of heaven.
Pastor Chambers, when you were in Egypt recently, perhaps you saw what is called the ox.
Oh, yes. Yes, everywhere.
And I see a lot of women wearing that today in jewelry right here in America. They're wearing it on rings, and they call it a good luck charm. They call it life, that they'll have a long and happy life.
It's a pagan symbol for life.
Now, it evidently is what? The cross with a circle
on the top of it.
Or an egg-shaped oval on the top.
Perverted cross.
Now, is that not the sign of Venus?
I'm not sure which god it represents.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't read that.
But now, here we have this Ankh. It's called the Ankh, A-N-K-H. Recently, I received a catalog of goddess gifts. You can buy, if you worship the goddess, you can buy some of these goddess gifts. They had a number of bumper stickers in there that you could show people that you worship the goddess. But they actually had a bumper sticker, and I guess they thought it was a little bit humorous, but I think it does tell a story. You've seen Christians with the bumper stickers, honk if you love Jesus. Well, this was a bumper sticker, and it said, honk if you love Isis. Now, in the book of Acts, Paul talked about Diana, the goddess of the Ephesians, whom all the world worships. Now, was Isis just another name, another goddess type for Diana?
I have not documented that, but I'm sure that's true. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's one goddess represented anywhere in paganism that is the goddess of fertility that doesn't tie directly back to Inanna and Ishtar and Isis.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that's true. My study has taken me I've got to go to Persia, which is Iran. I've got to go to Rome. I'm trying to get ready for two or three other trips of that nature because I want to document without one moment of hesitation that every one of these false pagan religions goes right back to Babylon and that it's nothing, absolutely nothing, but a revival of polytheism. That word polytheism is very important because that's all paganism is. It's many, many gods representing every aspect of the natural world as we know it.
Pastor Chambers, I want us to talk more about this tomorrow, about this polytheism. Pastor Chambers, thank you for being with us, and let's come back tomorrow and talk more about Mystery Babylon and Bible prophecy. Folks, remember, Jesus said, when you see these signs, look up, for your redemption draweth nigh. Until tomorrow, this is Tex Mars.